Well, it's a delight to invite Chris to come up and join me at the front for the next bit of our time together. And we're going to be using these stools. Welcome. It's great to have you up here, Chris. Is your mic on and everything?
I hope so.
Oh, yes, it is. Fantastic. Excellent. Well, we're going to have a bit of a conversation today in this teaching slot, and we hope it'll be helpful to you and of benefit to you. I just want to start by sharing a couple of stories from a couple of people. One is a person by the name of Martha, and the other one is a person by the name of Kevin. So Martha is a mum of two boys, a wife, a full-time worker who had lots of things going on in her lives, you know, lots of stress naturally, all those sorts of things. And she had lots of things going on in her life. She was preoccupied all day with schedules for work, for dinner, for the kids' activities, for taking the dog outside and everything else that had to get done. She felt overwhelmed most of the time and constantly on edge. And at one point, she actually had a physical collapse and had to then make some assessments and get some help and some treatment because although she was functioning, she actually had some issues that were going on. Kevin was highly successful at work. He was there early in the morning, late at night, making phone calls, diligently working, rapidly responding to emails and texts, and people were thinking that that was part of him being a driven and hard worker. But it was actually not driven by that, but it was actually driven by some internal stuff that was going on for Kevin. His days got worse. He was functioning, but he would come home exhausted, unable to do anything but drink a couple of glasses of wine and go to sleep. His house was a mess. He didn't have a personal life. He was at work, he was looking like a winner, but everything else was seemingly collapsing around him. Now, you may recognize some elements out of those two stories that resonate with your life or with lives of people that you know. So I thought I'd start, Chris, by asking, what is actually going on in these two people's lives that maybe they weren't aware of initially?
Okay, so just as a preface, the reason why David has asked me to talk is that this is my job. So I'm a clinical psychologist, so this is my bread and butter. So I'm going to preface that this is just a general talk. This isn't going to cover everybody's situation, but hopefully it will be of use. So listening to these two stories, and I haven't heard these previously, I'd say that Martha has anxiety, but not of a clinical level, because she's still able to function pretty well. Kevin? Yeah. Kevin, though, he's still functioning, but I would probably now start to put him into more the clinical level because he's starting to use alcohol to cope, to kind of calm down, to wind down, and his house is a mess. So we'd be kind of thinking, oh, he's not functioning too well. So there are other words that we might use apart from anxiety that people kind of relate to. So that might be feeling nervous or apprehensive, fearful, worrying, all the way through down to dread. So it sounded like Martha had a panic attack when she collapsed. Okay. And so that's a kind of an extreme kind of form of anxiety. So you might kind of think, what's the point of having all of this language? So it's very important for us because it helps us get a kind of a handle on what's going on. So these are very physical sensations that are going on in a person who's anxious. And so they can feel, as David said, quite overwhelming. And so giving them like a handle to say, okay, that's worry or that's anxiety means that you can kind of say, okay, that's what I'm dealing with. It's not overwhelming. So in different cultures, there'll be different words for that. And even in families, there's going to be different words. Like it could be the heebie-jeebies, could be the collywobbles, could be butterflies in your tummy. So it just helps people to know within themselves what's going on, but also to communicate to others, this is what's going on for me, so that there's maybe some help coming.
Yeah. Naming stuff is actually really core to what it is to be human. Like, we all have names, right? And the first thing that Adam did in the garden was that he gave names to animals, right? Often before we can begin to address things, we have to be able to identify it and name it.
Absolutely.
And that's what these people were experiencing. They didn't have a word for identifying what was going on, but when they heard the word anxiety was connected to what they're experiencing, it was the starting point for them. So why do you think it might be important for us in our church at this time to address the whole area of anxiety?
Okay, so humans have always been anxious. And at the moment, we could argue that there's been like a substantially increased level of things to worry about. We've had COVID, you know, wars, all sorts of things. So it's probably just a bit more of an exacerbation of what's been going on for us for a long, 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 long time. So some of you may know that there's actually a shortage of psychs at the moment, that there's big long wait queues to get in to see psychs because people are feeling more on edge. So, sorry to say, but you're always going to have some level of anxiety. So it keeps you, sorry Chris, it keeps you alive. So if you think about it, you know, a little kid, little toddler kind of, you know, getting close to the edge of the road, if you're in charge of that person, you're going to lunge forward and scoop that child out of the way. So there is survival value in being anxious, to have that kind of go get that person or save yourself or jump out of the way of the car. So hopefully over the next couple of few weeks, we're going to do a series on knowing what anxiety is, where does it come from, what does it feel like, but also what we can do to help ourselves with it, but also maybe help our family members with it, maybe even colleagues at work, commuters on the train if somebody's had a panic attack.
Yeah, so what we're going to do is we're going to be providing some resources in our small groups next week to unpack some stuff around anxiety, and then in 2 weeks' time, Chris and I are going to be back here again and looking at some more aspects of anxiety, and then there'll be a chance for another small group experience after that. And then later on, we're also planning to do an online thing with parents in particular about helping raise our kids to identify and manage and become resilient in the area of anxiety. Because, I mean, you were talking about this, just a vast majority or significant percentage of your clients, this is the issue.
Oh, yeah.
This is the issue.
About a third at least would be coming with a level of anxiety that's becoming, it's really upsetting their quality of life. So yes, we're all going to have some anxiety, but then there's anxiety that's kind of like of a more worrying nature.
Okay. So I'd love you, some people might be a bit like me and a bit less self-aware. Many of you are probably more self-aware than me, but if I was maybe I was experiencing anxiety, but I didn't know that I was, what would be, how would I begin to know, what were some things you'd point to or ask me about in my life to help try and unpack whether the physical or whatever other things are going on to help me identify that?
That's a very good question, David, because I have people come to me and they say that they're anxious, and when I ask them, how do you know that you're anxious, they're kind of stuck and they're puzzled. And so a really good way to get to sort of dig down into that is to check in with the body, because all feelings, so this is where the word feelings come from, they're actually the sensations in our bodies, and they are really good clues that tell us what could be going on. So anxiety could be, you know, like feeling, as I said, butterflies in the tummy. It could feel like nausea, like needing to pee, like sweaty, clammy, heart's pounding, all the way through to like collapsing, fainting, headaches, muscle tension. It's a doozy.
Okay.
There's also, though, I wanted to just say there's also a spectrum of intensity. So, yes, you've got kind of like butterflies in your tummy, which is kind of like a bit of an uneasiness, and then it kind of goes down, down, down to like panic, which is, it's not just butterflies, it's the whole zoo animals have been released and they're all rampaging around in the person. So this person could have collapsed, they could have fainted, they could have feel very clammy, their skin is almost damp, and they can actually think that they're having a heart attack. So a lot of ED, emergency department presentations for people who've got panic, they're all hooked up to the ECG, they actually find out there is nothing wrong with their heart, but the intensity of that constriction around their chest area and their throat, they think they're dying. They really think they're dying. So clearly that's not the kind of life to the full that Jesus is wanting for us.
Yeah. Okay. Mm. So I think you've talked a bit about it before, but maybe you can sort of get into a bit more of the underlying physiology as well, about where do these anxiety, and we've talked about, you know, wanting to sort of save the kid from running out on the road, which is the sort of the keeping safe sort of response. But where do some of these other feelings of anxiety come from?
Okay, so even though we feel them in our body, like stomach, chest, they're always made in the head. They're always made in the brain. And so the brain's number one job always, 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 always will be to keep either you safe or your loved one safe. Like that is just, everything else is just going to go second down the line for that. So as I said, you know, the child runs out into the road. What happens is the brain sort of sees the toddler. And so the brain sees that. It says, guys, adrenaline, we need lots of adrenaline. And so the adrenal gland go, and there's this huge surge of adrenaline. And adrenaline is, you probably know what adrenaline is, it makes you move. It gives you intense energy. So you've got this superhuman energy to go running and scoop the child out of the way. So, as I said, we need it. The problem, though, is when it's getting too much, we're getting exaggerated senses of fear going on. So it's very rare we actually have, you know, a life or death, typical life or death situation like a car or something like that. Most of the anxiety today is for stuff probably isn't going to happen. It's overrated. So you think about it, we had, you know, the start of the pandemic, everybody thought, oh, COVID, I could die. So if you're here, you have either had COVID and recovered, or you didn't even get COVID in the first place. Let's think about, so yeah, wars. We've got China, we've got Russia, we've got Ukraine. Oh, there could be a war. The reality is that the evidence is that we have never had a war on mainland Australia. The Eureka Stockade, maybe, but we haven't had a war. We haven't had a real war. And so it's an over-exaggerated, it's an exaggerated response. Mm-hmm.
And what about some of the other things that are going on in people's lives, whether it's work or, you know, internet stuff or things like that?
Yeah. So most of the stuff that we worry about is pretty minor. Could be like me talking up here today. Like I'm going to say, yeah, I've got a fair bit of nerves. I'm thinking, geez, I hope I don't stuff this up. What happens if I forget what I'm going to say? So I've got some nerves. But to be honest, at the end of the day, people are either going to say, Chris, you really screwed that up, never want to talk to you again. Most people, though, I'm hoping, will come and talk to me at morning tea and say, well done, Chris, good on... No, I'm just joking. Oops, I'm just joking that it's not that big a deal. So it could be somebody's said some nasty comments on social media, or it could be, you know, worrying about their child's cold. Pretty inane kind of stuff.
Okay. And so I think there's something about like importance of a particular thing, like reputation or work or whatever. If that's threatened, then that's going to...
Absolutely. So what's important to me might not be important to you, and what's important to you might not be important to me. So if I've got... Let's suppose I come from a poverty background and I've got these can't be without money fears, then the thought of losing my job, the thought of not being able to pay my bills is very, very big. I could get really stressed. But for somebody whose real worry is, what happens if I lose significant relationships around me? Like, what happens if my child dies? Or what happens if my marriage breaks down? And those are there are really different worries for different people. And so we can't say to someone, you know, David, what's your problem? You know, why are you so stressed? You know, it's just nothing. Because for that person, it is a big deal. And it would be really invalidating of me to say that to you, and you might feel worse off than if I'd said nothing at all. So,
because they could probably turn around, it could be something else that's going on in your life. That if that was under threat, you would feel anxious.
And yeah.
So it happens that thing isn't happening for you at the moment, so you're all fine and dandy.
Yeah. So a good mantra is, it hurts where the person says it hurts, okay? So we just have to accept that that's their story.
Okay. Now, we are going to explore this a bit more in a couple of weeks' time, but if I'm experiencing anxiety right now, what's maybe just one thing that I could do that would be a starting point for that?
Okay, so the first aid would be to focus on your breathing. So to deepen and slow in your breathing. And so that kind of breathing communicates to the brain, it's okay, dudes, we can calm down. So can I do a bit of brain nerdy anatomy?
I'm more up for that sort of science stuff, so hit me with it.
Okay. So we have two nervous systems. You might think you've only got one, but you've actually got two. So the first one's called the sympathetic nervous system, and you would know that because you feel nervous when that one's switched on. And so that's in charge of like fight, flight. You've heard of flight, fight? Yeah. The other one, though, is called the parasympathetic nervous system. And that's the one that kind of is in charge of what we call rest and digest. So you're all calmed down. You need to actually turn that one on to calm down. So like after today, you'll go home and you'll have your Sunday roast and you'll be kind of relaxed and you'll kind of maybe a bit sleepy. That's your parasympathetic nervous system working really well. So when we're stressed, we need to turn that one down and we need to intentionally turn this one up, turn the volume up on that one. So we'll be doing some breathing in a moment, just to get you guys to have a little practice. But I thought I might get you. Do you guys want to just play a little hand game along with me? Just a little hand game. So if you feel comfortable, stick your hand up in there. And so you're going to move your thumb over your palm and you're going to roll your fingers down here. So that's a representation of your brain. Okay, so you know the jelly.
Not a scale.
No, maybe. So sorry. So here.
I'm feeling a bit stressed about that.
No. So here, these knuckly bits. This is here, and that is. Let's just, for the simple sake of it, that's your thinking brain. That's your thinking brain. So when we're okay and we're not stressed, that's working really, really well most of the time. But when we stress, what happens is this goes offline. It actually kind of stops working really well. So you might have noticed that when you are stressed, it's really hard to sometimes gather your thoughts, or your thoughts are jumping around, or you're so wound up, it's hard to make sense of what you're thinking. So what's happened is that there are two other main parts in the brain that have taken over. So the thumb represents what we call the limbic system, and that's in charge of memories and emotions. This kind of palmy bit down here, kind of down in your palm, that represents the brain stem, and that's in charge of things, digestion, heart rate, immunity, all that kind of stuff. Now, these two parts, it's hard to kind of get your head around this, but these two parts have no thinking, pardon me, have no thinking to them. They're just going to keep doing their thing. So, like, we have the roast dinner today and we say, okay, I'm not, just stop digesting, just stop. That's a thought. I'm trying to tell my body to stop digesting. It's not going to stop. It's just going to keep digesting, thankfully, it's going to keep digesting my food, whether I tell it to with my brain or not. So what we're going to do, we're going to do a bit of breathing exercise. So what we're going to do is do six or seven, I'll be counting it with you, to breath to deepen and slow your breath, okay? If you like to, you can do it with me. Now, I don't want you hyperventilating or fainting on me. I just want you to breathe and make sure the exhalation is a little bit longer, slower than you normally would. Okay, take a moment just to check in with your body. Does that feel any different? Just note to yourself, does that feel any different than when before you started that activity? We've brought the thinking brain back online. It's not a foolproof, but for someone who's panicking, this will really help them calm, settle, get them to work out, okay, what am I going to do next?
Right, I almost fell asleep there. That was really relaxing. Let's just check whether anybody else has fallen asleep over there. All right. Well, it's not unusual. It's okay. There was in the church that I was in, there was a guy that would regularly fall asleep in my sermons. So, I'm okay. I'm not stressed by that. But
I'm not stressed by that.
Here's the thing: if you fell asleep, then you probably needed to fall asleep, and that's okay. So that's really helpful. And you know, this is only an intro. It's only a first thing. We're not sort of covering the whole way you deal with anxiety or whatever else, but it is a church service. So where does God fit into all of this?
Well, I think it would be true to say that God is very aware of what's going on for us at any given point in time. So you think about Jesus, he cried out to God in the Garden of Gethsemane. He was very aware, I'm feeling really stressed, I'm going to be dead soon, and please help me, God. So God is not unaware of what's going on for us, but his presence is always with us. So we can confidently say that no matter what is going to happen, life or death even, we're going to be okay. That confidence is ours. And so you might have thought of, you guys might have heard of Julian of Norwich. She was a Christian mystic many centuries ago, and she plumbed into the presence of God regularly, and she came away with these profound sayings, which were, one of them was, all shall be well, all manner of things shall be well. And she was in a tiny, tiny little room in a castle, not as a princess, but as a kind of like in a retreat. And there were plagues and wars, and she was still able to say something like that. And a more modern day version would be, I don't know if anybody watched the movie The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel. I love that one. And there's this refrain that just constantly kept being peppered through, and it was, everything will be all right in the end. And if it's not all right, then it isn't the end.
Okay. And that's in some ways resonates with that common phrase in the scriptures, which is God saying to us, fear not, in a variety of different ways. And I think there's 365 references in the Bible for that, like one for every day of the year, fear not. And when we were talking about this, and it's not just the words fear not, it's the presence of the person, God, saying fear not. You know, if you're a child in something stress-inducing is happening to you, and you get an email from the other side of the world that says fear not, that's entirely different to your parents scooping you up in their arms and holding you close and saying fear not. And so I think there's this idea that it's not just the words of God telling us, like, that's a command, I'm not supposed to fear, but it's God speaking to us and being present with us and saying those words in his presence to us. But and I referred to this last week, but there's this underlying thing about fears. Do you want to speak a bit to that?
So some psychologists, in fact, is kind of a more of a growing body of research saying that these everyday anxieties that we have, actually, if we drilled down, if we really kind of like what was the root of all of that, it would be what we would call existential anxiety. And we all have it. And that is that fear of not existing. It's the fear of dying. And it's very confronting for people. It is very hard for people. We don't talk about death. We generally kind of want to not talk about it or even think about it. But if we do kind of like turn into that, as Christians, there's this idea, you know, even if I do have to face death or a loved one has to face death, I'm thinking here of Edwin's relatives, there is that certainty God is with this person and we are ultimately going to be okay. Can't promise that it's going to be roses and sunshine, but ultimately we're going to be okay.
Yeah, and I think that's particularly poignant given the season of the year, which is Easter, right?
Mm.
And if ever there was an anxiety-producing event in the lives of the disciples, let alone Jesus, but in the life of the disciples, and, you know, this deep existential, our leader has just been crucified, he's in a tomb over there, what are we going to do? Is it going to happen to me tomorrow? And there's this deep sense of fear and anxiety. And we're going to finish our time this morning looking at a passage where Jesus meets people, these disciples, in their anxiety and fear. It's from John chapter 20, beginning at verse 19. It says, "On the evening on that first day of the week, when the disciples were together with the doors locked for fear of the Jewish leaders." And so they are experiencing anxiety. It's like, hold your breath, sort of, I can't breathe, I can't go out of the house, sort of anxiety, right? "Jesus came and stood among them and said, 'Peace be with you.'" Which is, if you like, it's the positive version of fear not. Peace be with you is fear not expressed in the positive way. "Peace be with you. And after this, he showed them his hands and his side." And I find that interesting because you talked about becoming aware of our body. So here they are, stressed out of their minds, and Jesus appears in a bodily form to them and then shows them his body. So he's taking their minds off the fear of what might be outside, what the Roman soldiers might do, and he's saying, "Look at my body." After this, he showed them his hands and side. The disciples were overjoyed when they saw the Lord. And so again, it's in the midst of their anxiety, the presence of Jesus diverted their attention. And it's the whole thing about, it's like, it's very hard if you say, stop thinking about an elephant, you know, but you can start thinking about something else. You can't, it's very hard to delete your attention on something, but you can transfer your attention. And so here Jesus appears, he gives them a bodily thing to focus on, and because they're connected with their Lord who they thought was gone, there's this incredible joy that floods in. And then it goes on. "And again Jesus said, 'Peace be with you. As the Father has sent me, I am sending you.'" And then it goes on. And it's really interesting from just what we've done. And he said, "And with that he breathed on them and said, 'Receive the Holy Spirit.'" Because the Greek and Jewish words or Hebrew words for breath and spirit are essentially the same word, right? And so here they're in an anxious position, and what does Jesus do? He breathes on them. He helps them take notice of breath. But then he more deeply connects that to the presence of God in them. And just as you mirrored Chris breathing, I'm sure they began to do that. And so it's not just a physical thing that we can do, a physical exercise, but we can then also know that it's the Spirit of God that we are connecting with when we focus a bit more intentionally on our breathing. So receive the Holy Spirit. If you forgive anyone's sins, their sins are forgiven. If you do not forgive them, they are not forgiven. And I didn't highlight it before, but in the verse before, in verse 21, it says, "Peace be with you. As the Father has sent me, I am sending you." And so in the middle of this anxiety creating situation, first of all, he's physically present with them. He directs their attention away from the anxiety to his bodily presence. He speaks peace to them. There's bring joy. He breathes on them, but he also gives them something to do. There's something I want you to do. As Father, the Father sent me into this world, I'm sending you into this world. There are things for you to do. And that can also be a thing for us. Okay, I feel like I don't have any agency in this situation. Okay, but God is sending me to do something. Even if it's just to pray for the person who's causing the fear or anxiety. But I think this is a really profound scripture of Jesus interacting with anxious disciples. And so I'm going to encourage you to read this passage regularly this week. John chapter 20 from verses 19 through to 23. And you may have never read this passage as a passage about fear and anxiety, but hopefully this is another lens through which you can see it, and it ties up a lot of what we've been talking about this morning. So really appreciate you doing that, spending time with us and explaining those things to us, Chris. That's been really helpful. And we're going to be continuing to do that, unpack it in small group settings and the next time we're together here in 2 weeks' time. And we have gone a bit longer than we normally do, and that's okay because it's been really important to do that. And we are actually going to finish with our last song. So I'm going to invite the team to come back up, because this song is the blessing, and it's the Aaronic blessing, and it's the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up the light of his countenance upon you and bring you peace. So this is the Old Testament equivalent of Jesus appearing and saying, peace be with you. As we pray this, as we sing this song, we can sing it over ourselves and we can sing it over each other. That this is the reality, that God is with you, that God is paying attention to you. That God, when he sees you, God's face breaks out in delight. God's pleased to see you. And God's paying attention to you. His countenance is towards you. His face is towards you. To be gracious to you, to bless you, and to bring you peace. And so we can be tempted to sing, I think, these songs with eyes closed. But as we sing this song, let's actually look around at each other and sing this to each other. Let's stand and sing.